Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
What do you call a sleeping dinosaur? A Z-Rex. I really dig earthworms, but I haven't met one yet that doesn't have a dirty mouth. Why don't squash balls drink coffee? Because they're already bouncing off the walls.
If you just read the bio for Dr. Steve, host of Weird Medicine on Sirius XM 103 and made popular by two really comedy shows, Opie and Anthony, Ron and Fez, you would have thought that this guy was a bit of, a clown.
Why can't you give me the respect that I'm entitled to?
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent to Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
From the world-famous Cardiff Electric Network studios, it's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve and my little pal, Dr. Scott. Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
He's a traditional Chinese medical provider who gives me street cred with the wacko alternative medicine assholes. By the way, this is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you got a question, you're embarrassed to take your regular medical provider, you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347. Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine or at DrScottWM. Visit our website at drsteve.com for podcasts, medical news, and stuff you can buy. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything you hear with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, practical nurse, acupuncturist, traditional Chinese medical specialist, whatever. See, now Tacey's already wearing off on me. She takes all the fun out of these lists. With that stern look on her face, she's not even here. Anyway, check out stuff.drsteve.com, stuff.drsteve.com for all your Amazon and online shopping needs. And go to tweakedaudio.com, offer code FLUID for 33% off, the best earbuds for the price, and the best customer service anywhere. It's tweakedaudio.com, offer code FLUID. Go to simplyherbals.net to check out Dr. Scott's website and patreon.com/weirdmedicine. That's the show that Tacey and I do, and we just recently had Anthony Cumia on that show. It was a fun one, and it is will never be anywhere but on Patreon. And so we've had the Troika. We've had Jim Norton. We've had Greg Hughes, and now Anthony Cumia. And one of these days, perhaps we shall have E-Rock and Travis and other folk on there. Sam Roberts was the one that held the camera when I did the first prostate exam on Pat Duffy, so we probably should have him on at some point.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was fun.
That's cool.
All right. And if you want me to say fluid to your mama or secretions to your daddy, just go on cameo.com/weirdmedicine, and it's cheap. And it's really cheap. And if it's too expensive, tell me, and I'll even drop the price for it. I don't care. I just like doing it. As a matter of fact, I got to do one tonight for somebody who's their 40th birthday coming up. And it's ridiculous, and I just say stupid things. And you are I'll mostly say what you want me to say within certain – I mean, don't be – you know, it's 2022. Come on. But anyway, cameo.com/weirdmedicine. All right, Dr. Scott. Check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net, simplyherbals.net. We want to say happy birthday to our network founder, Cardiff Electric. So have a very happy birthday to you, sir. All right, very good. So what you got, Dr. Scott? We're going to do a lot of phone calls today. We've got a million of them.
Cool.
But I know you have some stories that you want to do.
Yeah, I've got two quick stories.
Okay.
I saw this. It's kind of cool. It carries. It goes back to.
Is it kind of cool?
A shower. You'll be the judge of
okay.
this.
Okay. Very good.
The takes us back a couple shows. Research in pigs shakes up what we know about dying. So
what?
Yeah, some brand new research out of Yale. They've actually been able to restore blood circulation and other cellular functions to pigs that have been dead, completely clinically dead for over an hour.
Uh-huh.
And what it does, it suggests that. There may be some ways to prolong, and I'm sitting here looking at James Bird's picture up there, you know, organ transplants.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So they're not talking about taking a dead pig and bringing it back to life.
No. Just
so what are they talking about?
Well, they're talking about the organs.
Some more clickbait bullshit.
They're talking about the organs specifically.
Okay.
Kidneys and hearts and lungs. And what they found was
So let me just throw this out there.
Yeah.
And then when you do organ transplantation, if the patient's been dead and their heart has stopped and there has not been perfusion to those organs, the only thing that you can do is basically harvest some corneas and some skin and stuff like that, which, by the way, sounds horrible, but it's when they harvest your skin for the burn unit, they're not skinning you like you've seen it, like if you watch Alone where they skin like these rabbits and stuff. They just take the very top layer of skin, a very thin layer of from your back, you know, the widest expanse, and maybe some stuff from the abdomen and chest, but it's not something anybody would see. But anyway, before you go any further, what I'm hoping that they're talking about doing is being able to take someone that's had a cardiac death that normally they couldn't harvest kidneys and stuff from, and bringing them into the hospital, somehow doing some magic and reperfusing those organs and making them usable without having to keep the person alive on the ventilator. Because right now, the way we do it is when someone is brain dead, that means that they have died. There's no blood flow going to their brain, and they've been declared dead, but they're still on the ventilator, so their heart's still beating, and you're still able to get oxygen from the outside to the inside using mechanical ventilation. Then you could take that person back into an operating suite, and their organs are still perfusing. They've still got, when I say perfusing, they still have blood flow to them, so they're still viable. That's how we do it now.
Yep.
So tell me the rest of the story.
So give yourself a bill.
Okay, I will do so.
Yep.
Yourself a bill?
That's exactly what they're talking about. What they're saying is once you can hook them up to the perfusion and maintain that perfusion for a long time. And what they're hoping is that all of these, a lot of the times, as you said, once someone's died, then they don't have any real hope.
Right, they come in dead.
Yeah. They're already deceased. There may be a chance now where they can actually reperfuse those organs because they don't think these organ cells die as quickly as we thought they did.
Well, so what are they doing?
Perfusion. Hooking them up to perfusion machines. And they were talking about...
So wait a minute. Are they taking the animal and perfusing them, or are they taking the organs out?
The organ alone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they can organ out alone and perfusing it. So I'm sure there's
are they using some sort of special solution, did they say?
Solution. That's what I was looking for right now.
Some special blood or something.
Some special juice. What they're saying is that there's the problem is, as you know, and two, as soon as someone dies, there's a whole cascade of chemicals that start breaking things down. And so what they're doing is by perfusing it and then giving some medication, stopping that deterioration process.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're right on.
Huh.
Way to go, man.
But it doesn't say how they're doing it?
No, it's just strictly said Oh, this is the worst part.
What?
It's
hilarious.
The pigs were given anesthesia, and then a heart attack was induced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's how they do it.
Why not? But it just sounds awful.
I mean, you don't have...
And then you get
You
naked.
Don't have an ICU for pigs where they are, you know, they... get so sick that they become brain dead, and then their family comes in and says, yes, we want to do, you know, scientific research on them. No, they have to induce brain death.
Make sure they're bacon and not pork chops.
Oh, God. Coming from the pescatarian.
Exactly.
So, okay, if you see anything else on this, well, so basically what Dr. Scott's alluding to is that there may be some hope to increase the supply of usable organs out there from where they are now, because people, some of these donor services are so strict that it's hard. Well, you can get on the list, you can die before you get certain organs.
Sure.
And I've had several patients have that happen, particularly people who are trying to get a liver transplant. Right. Often they're alcoholics.
Yeah, I think liver's the toughest, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough one, yeah. Because, you know, a lot of the folks that I have were alcoholics, so they had cirrhosis.
Okay.
And the place says you got to be off everything. Mm-hmm. That's no opioids for pain and no alcohol for 6 months before we'll even put you on the list. And a lot of those patients don't make it to the point where they can get the transplant. So this may allow them to liberalize. If they can get all the livers that they want, they might be able to liberalize that and make it 2 months or 3 months, you know, just enough to make sure that the patient is going to, you know, comply. Because you don't want to give somebody a new liver and then just have them, you know, drink that one down, too.
No, that's...
Now, ultimately, we've got to come up with a way that where we can brew these things in vats, where you take stem cells and you say, okay, I need 1,000 livers, you know, 250 hearts and a shitload of kidneys, and you just have these vats and they just start growing these organs. And when you do it, you can genetically engineer them so that they don't have proteins on them that would cause rejection. There's all kinds of cool crap you can do.
Right.
We have to get that. And then down the road, could we have, you know, artificial kidneys and artificial livers and things and just become cyborgs? And then, what the fuck, go the extra mile and just upload your brain into a computer.
All I can see right now is, you know, you see the fish hatcheries where they have, you know, thousands of tanks there with all of this, you know, individual fish swimming around and reproducing. And I can just see that same thing with, you know, kidneys here. Livers here.
Yeah, you can have some weird organism that, you know, swims around and then somehow reproduces and makes a human kidney. You know, why not?
Oh, my God, that's crazy. Yeah,
but,
so that's the...
But, yeah, ultimately, we need immortal bodies. The only way to do that is for us to do what happened. By the way, and most people are not aware of this, in 2001, what happened was, spoiler, came out 50 years ago, the aliens who were just running around the universe helping species out found these ape-like ancestors of ours, put that monolith down, and it taught them just enough to get them to succeed as a species. But by the time we found the second monolith on the moon and exposed it to the sunlight, that's what the signal was. Mm-hmm. When these things get advanced enough to find the magnetic anomaly, I'm glad Tacy isn't here because she'd already be rolling her eyes, find the magnetic anomaly, unearth it, so that thing became exposed to sunlight for the first time in 6 million years. Mm-hmm. It sent a signal to the Stargate that was in orbit in the book around Saturn, but in the movie around Jupiter, alerting them that humans had made that transition. Mm-hmm. They were now fledgling spacefarers. But in 6 million years, they had become perfect beings of energy. They didn't even have bodies anymore. Hmm. So that's what they did to Bowman at the end when he turned into that embryo. Mm-hmm. They had converted him to a being of pure energy and sent him back to Earth to further Earth's evolution. But, you know, that's the way he saw himself, is that he saw himself as an embryo. Mm-hmm. So that was the sort of quote-unquote body that he created for himself. So there you go.
There you go.
So we have to, it's a logical progression. We figure out how to grow organs in a vat. Mm-hmm. Then we have fake organs that aren't even organic, that work just as good, if not better. Mm-hmm. Then we have inorganic bodies. And then eventually we have bodies of pure information.
Mm.
There
Can't
you go.
Wait. There's, what do you think they'll be shaped like?
pot talk for the day, man. Well, if we're pure energy, if we're pure information, we can take on any shape we want.
There you go. Now that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So I might have muscles eventually again.
I was thinking about that. I've got to start working out again. I need somebody to go with me to challenge me the way that my buddy in Chapel Hill did. He and I, he was a ham radio friend of mine, but we would go work out together, you know, three times a week. We would challenge each other. And it was really effective way to do it. And now I just suck. I just don't have. But if I had somebody that would commit to going with me at least two times a week, preferably three, I think I could get back into it again.
If you would ever retire.
No, I could find the time. I would just go, and I would take it away from Tacey time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not going to go over so well either.
It'll be fine. I'm going to take a lot of other shit away from Tacey time, too.
Hey, she's retired. You can't take too much away. All right.
Don't
number,
get me started.
Hey, number two from our old buddy.
I'm just kidding, Tacey. She doesn't listen.
No, she doesn't listen. She could care less. From our old buddy, Stacy, he sent us a great article from the University of Cincinnati. Using light to restore cell function.
Okay.
So, University of Cincinnati researchers.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Like putting ultraviolet light in your body? Who said that a couple of years ago? And
who was apparently told
that he was an idiot?
Whoever would have thought of something like that? That's right.
I mean, I'm not saying it was genius, but, you know, throwing out ideas. Your old buddy. But anyway, tell me about this.
No, it looks pretty interesting. So what they've done at the University of Cincinnati, and going back to exactly what, and you kind of hit on this, I don't know if you meant to or not, but discussing how light activity can stimulate proteins inside the body. And what they were, what they found is that in cancer cells specifically, the mitochondria, which are the power plants of the, of the cells, right? So they
look like little bacteria. Yep. They probably were at one point.
Yeah, and they come together. It's a process called fusion. They create energy. excuse me. And when they separate, it's called fission. And what they're doing is using light, and they're using proteins that are light sensitive to send in. And when they identify this, they're stimulating these allergies, but they're stimulating lysosomes to help these cells split more normally.
Okay.
Or the mitochondria to split more normally.
Oh, and the more mitochondria you have, the more mitochondrial function.
Right.
Therefore, the more energy you have.
Right. So what they're doing is using the body's natural system to stop the process of cancer.
How will it do that?
Well, what he says, what we have actually is the natural process we're just making faster. There's no, it's not a chemotherapy, it's not a radiotherapy, and it's called,
some kind of fucking phototherapy.
Optogenic treatments, yeah.
Okay, so how do they do this? What are they actually doing?
So what
are they taking your blood out and putting it through a clear tube and exposing that to light, or are they just exposing you to light and going good luck?
No, what they're actually doing now. This, of course, they're just now starting a process. But what they're doing now is using different types of light that'll penetrate into the skin further. So they're that's why they call it optogenics, and multiple different colors to affect the. The mitochondrial function to help with cancer.
So you just, all you do is just...
You just, no.
I don't understand.
No, well, what they're doing is they're actually taking these proteins that are specifically engineered to accept this light or to emit light.
Okay.
And they're hitting it with the light, and that's what's stopping the mitochondrial process.
Okay, so I'm looking here at research from Tufts University, and they used frog embryos.
Okay.
And it had RNA that encoded a mutant gene known to cause cancer-like growth. So this is pretty, you know, preliminary, not clinical, human clinical stuff. And they used blue light that activated these positively charged ion channels, which induced an electric current that caused the cells to go from cancer-like to a normal, more negatively polarized state. Okay. They repeated this process using green light activated proton pump. An activation of both agents significantly lowered the incidence of tumor formation and increased the frequency in which the tumors regressed into normal tissue. So this is a frog embryo model in this one. And what they found was that all the, you know, healthy cells maintain a more negative voltage on the interior compared with the exterior. But then, you know, opening and closing of these ion channels caused the voltage to become more positive. And this allows tumors to be detected by their abnormal bioelectrical signature before they're otherwise apparent. So this is good for detection and maybe something for treatment. Of course, very, very, you know, test tubey stuff. And whether this is going to be something that will pan out for humans remains to be seen. But it is interesting.
Well, and you think the
we've got to look at everything.
Yeah, the thing I take from this is what they're doing is they're interrupting the mitochondrial function. Because cellular growth is just uncontrolled, or cancer is uncontrolled cellular growth.
Yeah.
So what they're trying to do is stop the mitochondria from reproducing so quickly.
Well, that's
it. By zapping them with the light, using
and
this.
And if you can do that only in
liposome.
In cancer cells, right. That'd be awesome. You just shut them down, and they die. Yeah. Yeah.
Using a liposome that's almost like a Trojan horse, I guess. It's too specifically. Receive this light instead of detection is for killing the cancer cell.
Okay.
So hopefully it's something good.
Well, you know, there's so much shit going on. I tell patients that they should just kick the can as far down the road as they possibly can because this stuff is changing every single day.
It is evolving.
All right. You got anything else? Because both of those were kind of shitty. So,
hey, I didn't see them.
All right. Oh, you read them, though.
Number one thing. Don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
All right. Let's see what we got here.
Hello, Dr. Steve and friends. This is Mike from Ohio.
Hey, Mike.
I just signed paperwork to have my body donated to the local medical school. They say they'll keep the body for 7 years and then cremate it and send the remains back to my family.
Right.
My question is, what exactly will they be doing to my body?
Yeah, after 7 years, they're going to be going, who? This package is going to show up, and it's like, oh, that's Mike. Who? Anyway, joke didn't work the first time, didn't work the second time. I repeated the exact same joke. But yeah, Mike, so good for you for doing this. You're going to advance medical science, but I wonder if is it truly 7 years or is it up to 7 years? Because like at my medical school, they would just take people's bodies after they're done using them, and if they donated them for anatomic study, they would go into a vat and they would sit there from what the anatomist told me for up to a year. And then they would drag them out and then put them in the anatomy lab for the first year medical students or the dental students or whatever. And then you would dissect on those for anywhere between 3 to 6 months. And then they would take them and dispose of them. One of my most vivid memories, though, was this guy in my lab. When we got down to the pelvis, you had to do a hemipelvectomy on your cadaver, which meant that you basically took their left leg off. And I remember him walking through the anatomy lab with a left leg and half of a pelvis over his shoulder, you know, carrying it like he was carrying a log or something.
Oh my gosh.
And then just throwing it in the trash. You hear this clonk it goes in the trash. And I'm like, I don't think that's where that goes. But my other thing that happened to me was dreaming about anatomy lab. And I would dream that you walked in and all of a sudden your cadaver would sit upright and look at you. And that was apparently a dream that a lot of people had.
Hmm.
Now, you guys had cadavers too, though, in crazy, crazy, quack lab, right?
Quack
medical school.
Quack lab, yeah. It's a,
DOMs out there. I'm just kidding.
No, I'm so used to it. I enjoy it now. Yes. Yeah, but not the entire body. We did parts.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, and that's. we had one actually that was not preserved at all. So it was live smelling.
Wow.
It was interesting.
Why'd they do that?
Just to see where the needles go, I guess.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So at my medical school, there was a guy who was over the anatomy lab, and he was selling body parts.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so how that works is you have someone that wants to practice doing hand surgery. So it's just like, you know, you slip him a hundy, and he'll give you a little package with a formaldehyde-preserved forearm and hand, and then you can just do what you want to with it, you know, no questions asked. And the other thing was, and now allegedly, although I don't remember who this guy was, so I don't know if he was convicted of this stuff, but he was allegedly accused of all these things, and he was allegedly accused of also having a funeral home, which is a little bit of a conflict of interest.
A little
so
bit.
So he was getting some body parts from there as well, and then stacking, you know, bodies and not putting certain people where they thought they were and things like that.
Yes, yeah, so when you think dear old dad's going into the incinerator and
or into the, you know, $20,000 mausoleum.
Exactly.
And there's just nothing there.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
And not only did they take the 20 grand, but also got another couple.
Ten on top of it.
Right, for selling parts. Now that kind of shit, they've really clamped down on that, and they've become a lot more vigilant and not trusting people anymore to do these things the way that they're supposed to. So there's a lot more controls on it. That's my understanding.
Holy moly.
But our buddy James Byrd, who came in, second in the funniest fucker in the Tri-Cities competition, has given up his role as the chief dude in that Restore Life USA. But they take people... their bodies, when they're done using them, they do not preserve them right away. They do medical research and preserve some stuff and then ship out, you know, if someone's doing a study on pancreas cells, they teach them how they want them to retrieve the cells, how to preserve them and send them to them. And then they always will cremate you within 30 days and return you to your family at that point, cremated for nothing. So you get a free cremation out of it, and it's only 30 days instead of 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
Real quick question from Darren Parker. He's asking about how to donate bodies to the body farm. So, you know,
you just call them.
Yeah, because University of Tennessee Knoxville's got the body farm there, and of course, it's world renowned for the research that they do with. The decomposition.
Forensic stuff. So if people don't understand what the body farm is, they basically do forensics. Mm-hmm. So what they're looking at is, if you've been there for a month, what bugs do they find on you? Where do they find
when,
them? What
where,
state of composition are you in? And all that kind of stuff.
And if you're in mud or if you're under a grass pile or under a dirt pile, it's pretty crazy. I've got a friend of mine went through that program and went on to work with the TBI and FBI. And he told me some interesting stories because they put some crazy situations out there.
They'll put you in cars. They'll do all kinds of stuff. So it's called the Forensic Anthropology Center, College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. Just go to fac.utk.edu. That's fac.utk.edu. And that's FAC is for Forensic Anthropology Center. And you can see how you can donate.
Yeah.
And there's body donation is the third link down. And you can click on that. And it'll tell you everything that you need to do. You can get a little packet about body donation. Now, are there other body farms in the United States?
You know, I don't know.
Let's look up body farms in the USA.
You can be part of research.
Yep.
Pretty cool.
Okay, 7 such facilities exist across the United States. Let's see where they are. So there's one at University of Tennessee. Western Carolina, really?
Over in Cullowhee.
Western Kakalaki.
Kakalaki.
Texas State University, Sam Houston State University, Southern Illinois, Colorado Mesa University, and University of South Florida. I bet that one is rank.
Oh, God. USF sets in Tampa.
Can you imagine the stench?
Oh, because, you know, they're putting them in swamps in there.
Oh.
Letting alligators eat them.
Yeah, we need to read that.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
Tossing people with alligators.
So there's some in Australia, Canada, India, the United Kingdom, and other places. Let's see where the USF one. The USF Facility for Outdoor Research and Training is part of the Florida Institute for Forensic Anthropology and Applied Sciences at the University of South Florida in Tampa. Mm-hmm. The fort was created by, nobody cares. The facility is a 3.4-acre outdoor research laboratory in Pasco County, utilizing the USF Human Donation Program. The outdoor facility and the curated skeletal collection is opening to visiting scholars and researchers. The facility was opened on September 19, 2018, with 5 bodies. It's the first and only facility of its type in Florida, probably also the last, as well as in a subtropical environment. Pasco County Commission voted May 2019 to end the contract that allows USF to run the facility. Whoa! So who's... The agreement will end May 7, 2022. What in the hell? USF is in the process of finding a future alternative site. Well, May 7, 2022 is already passed, so I wonder what's going on there. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Wonder what you do with all the...
I don't know.
The ones they hid under...
Oh, my God.
Under a tree or...
Now, the Colorado one is, I'm assuming, is more cold. Are they doing humans? Or are they doing pigs? It says the first pig was placed in the outdoor facility in September 2012. The indoor facility opened for classes January 2013. Oh, and the first human donation was placed in November of 2013. And as of January 2018, boy, this thing has not been updated. This is a wiki page. The facility had 11 human cadavers, and they spelled cadavers wrong. Most remains desiccate quickly. And that means dry out. And current research focuses on variation in desiccation process and determining post-mortem interval on mummified or desiccated remains. Because, yeah, they're up high. Mm-hmm. And so things, rather than rotting, will dry out. If you've ever been,
just dehydrate, won't it?
Yeah, I remember when I was at Snowbird for a meeting. Mm-hmm. And it was weird that you would come out, and I don't remember how high up it is. You could look that up. Mm-hmm. Elevation of Snowbird, Utah.
It's 9,500.
Okay, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. You'd come out of the shower, and you wouldn't even have to dry off almost.
Right, it's pretty high. You know, all the water evaporates.
Yeah.
Do you ever see the story about the monk that really mummified himself at a high altitude over time and just dehydrated himself?
On purpose?
And when he died, he was literally...
He was already mummified.
He was already mummified.
No.
That's a true story.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
All right, one
is
last.
It, or is it a...
True story. I've seen the pictures.
Okay.
And it was on the internet, so it's got to be real.
Oh, it's got to be real.
Hey, you want a real quick question for Moving Messiah, then we'll get
to
some calls.
Yeah.
Moving Messiah
questions
says,
or questions?
Yeah, he says, let's see. Is it true that semen has vitamins and protein?
Of course.
And could you ingest it to survive in a survival situation?
Yeah, but how are you going to get gallons of it? That's the problem.
I just don't think it's going to be enough.
Let's do calories.
You might be able to get enough for an appetizer, but I don't think it's gonna get you home there, cowboy.
Let's see. Calories in human ejaculate. So there's between 5 and 25 calories per teaspoon. So it's about the same as a teaspoon of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And it says there's not a lot of research to back this up. That would be easy. I mean, how do they determine calories in anything. You can put it in a thing called a bomb calorimeter, and you can determine that. Mm-hmm. And so there are ways to do these things. They don't just make up these numbers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it says each ejaculation produces one teaspoon. Well, that's actually very...
Robust,
yeah. It's like 2.5 to 5 milliliters, so that'd be half to one teaspoon is my knowledge. And 25 calories per teaspoon, so you need 25. Let's say in the wild, you would have to have 1,300 calories to survive. Let's say 1,200.
Yeah.
So let's find out. Echo, what is 1,300 divided by 2.5?
1,300 divided by 2.5 is 520.
Wait, I fucked that up, didn't I? Wait a minute. We want 25 calories per teaspoon, so we want how many teaspoons there are. Mm-hmm. And we want 13 calories, so we got to divide by, 13 divided by 20, 1,300 divided by 25. Echo, what's 1,300 divided by 25?
1,300 divided by 25 is 52.
Oh, that's 52 teaspoons. Mm-hmm. So, Echo, how many cups are in 52 teaspoons?
52 teaspoons is about 1.083 cups.
Oh, so it's just a cup? Really? Okay, so 1,200 is starvation diet, but it's not a subsistence diet. But you could get the people on Alone live on 1,200 calories all the time if you watch that show, which is an amazing show, by the way. Way better, in my opinion, than Naked and Afraid, unless they would show people actually being naked, which you really don't want to see when they're starving. So a cup a day of semen, yes, you could survive on that for a little while. How about that?
That'd be tough.
It would be tough.
That'd be tough.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
There you go. All right.
Oh, my gosh.
And then here, under here, you know, when you ask a question of Google and it'll say people also ask, it's the two questions are, do cums have calories? And then the other one is ejaculate healthy to consume?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, my gosh.
And now, it says here, for the most part, yes, the components that make up semen are safe to ingest. That doesn't mean it's healthy to consume it. Ugh.
No.
All right. Now, there are some people that are allergic to semen, you know.
Mm-hmm. Even their own semen.
Yeah. Yes. And since the genitourinary tract, the seminal vesicles, the prostate, and the testes are sort of have an immune... a barrier.
Okay.
They won't have the symptoms until they ejaculate. And when they ejaculate, all of a sudden the immune system goes, hey, what the hell is that? And then it'll start to mount an immune response against their own semen.
Hmm.
And then they get sick. And then there are women that can have semen allergies as well. Mm-hmm. And that's for real. Yeah. But so just use a condom. Don't worry about it. What's wrong with you? All right. Okay, that was a good one. Anything else from the waiting room?
Yeah, real quick last thing. Diesel
doesn't have to be last.
Well, yeah, well
for right now.
Yeah, for now. Yeah, Diesel Child Keith from L.A. looks like he had a hiatal hernia operation on Friday.
Hiatal hernia or inguinal hernia?
Hiatal.
Okay. Yeah.
And he said the pain, thankfully, is finally going away. But he said the gas settling in his muscles and joints and post-op is just awful.
What?
Gas? Well, he refused to stay overnight in the hospital.
Oh.
And left after surgery. Doctor said to walk, walk to get rid of the...
intestinal gas.
So they probably blew him up with gas.
But you get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
As far as pain relief.
Yeah, they probably shed him some gas in his abdomen to distend it so they could see when they're doing the hiatal hernia repair, I would think. That's probably what it is.
Maybe, or he just had an ileus. So when they go in, ileus is when the bowel is paralyzed, and that'll happen whenever you touch the bowel.
Sure.
You know, the GI tract doesn't like being messed with.
No.
And so it won't move. You can't move your bowels, but, you know, you're still swallowing air, and it blows up like a balloon. You can't get rid of it because it won't contract.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, walking will help. Osteopaths have a maneuver where they put tension on the muscles next to the spine. You lay down, mm-hmm. put your hands under their back, and then you find the spine, and then you pull toward yourself mm-hmm. with a hook-like maneuver of the paraspinal muscles, the muscles yep. that run up and down next to the spine. And sometimes that will help, and also chewing gum will help mm-hmm. in that situation as well. Yeah. But yeah, I doubt that they blew. I doubt that they blew gas up into his colon to do this, to do a fundoplication,
yeah.
which is what that most likely was, where they take a piece of the stomach and wrap it around
the top of the
stomach yep. and the lower part of the esophagus to just sort of seal that off,
yep.
and kink it off so that you get a better. A better barrier to stomach contents going up into the esophagus and causing those hiatal hernia symptoms. But I bet you he had a post-operative ileus, and he just said, hell, I'm going home, which a lot of more people are doing these days. They're just like, I'm going home. And I've had some people recently that pulled that. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted him to stay, and they just said, F it, I'm going home. And you do, most of the time, you're going to be fine. You will miss some post-operative complications that way and end up in worse trouble. But for the most part, I think you're less exposed to, you know, bacteria and stuff that you can, mm-hmm. you know, drug-resistant bacteria that can be passed around the hospital. So I think getting out of the hospital earlier is probably a good idea. Back in the day when they did those, they'd be in the hospital for 5 to 7 days.
Oh, yeah.
Then they got down to 3 days. Then it's overnight. And now, hell, he's leaving right after his procedure.
He says, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Hey,
but I bet that's what happened.
Yeah, probably so. Candace just chimed in. She's got a four-month-old that she's breastfeeding. And her pediatrician, I guess, suggested she start adding a vitamin called Poly-V-Sol.
Yeah.
Said it smells terrible, no, and she hates it. Are there any alternatives to that?
No. I mean, okay. Yeah. Listen, kids don't give a shit what stuff tastes like. They'll suck down Pedialyte. Taste it your damn self. The kids' Pedialyte, not the adult Pedialyte. Because it is
not great,
terrible.
It's not great
and
at all.
My kid used to eat Indian food, and which is quite tasty, by the way. But he would just eat mushroom soup and sag paneer and all this stuff. And then when he got older, you know, it was like, yeah, I'm not eating that. So I'm hoping he'll come back to it someday. But the Poly-V-Sol is a liquid multivitamin supplement, and it also has iron in it. That's one issue. If you're using well water or you're breastfeeding, the kids can have some issues getting some vitamins until mm-hmm. they start eating a broader diet.
Okay.
So, and that's up to between you and your pediatrician. Whether I agree whether they give multivitamins to kids who are breastfeeding or not. You know, it's whatever. But yeah. if the pediatrician says so, there really isn't an alternative for that. But the kid doesn't care.
Yeah.
It stinks to us, and we think it's gross. Kids will put, especially at that age, when they've just come out of their fourth trimester. She said the kid is 4 months old?
4 months old, yep.
Okay. So humans are born 3 months too soon.
Okay.
But if they stayed in the womb that extra 3 months, you wouldn't be able to get them out.
Too big, yeah.
It'd be too big to pass through the vaginal canal. So we deliver them, but they really wish that they were still in the womb. That's why we swaddle kids for the first 3 months, mm-hmm. and why when you have a crying baby, if you'll swaddle them tightly and put them on their knee, on your knee on their side, and shake them back and forth, and shush into their ear, which, by the way, is part of my... one-page baby manual. I took Carp, his happiest baby on the block, and distilled a 300-page book down to one paragraph. That's how useless the rest of that book is, in my opinion. But the reason that works is because it mimics being in the uterus. for these kids. You know, being swaddled, they feel compressed, which they certainly were in the uterus. And then the shushing sound, they don't hear dum, 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 like as we sort of mimic the sound of the heart. What they hear is the blood flow, and it goes shh.
The whooshing, okay. Okay.
If you do that into a baby's ear when they're crying, they'll almost always stop if you do the other stuff too. So you're simulating. Well, anyway, so this kid is now completely out of that fourth trimester and is now entering into being a fully fledged human being and doesn't need those things. And breastfeeding is awesome. Do that as long as you can. I find it a little off-putting when I've got a four-year-old still breastfeeding, but you know, whatever, that's up to you. There are breastfeeding people that think that that's awesome, and there's other people that think it's weird. I you know, it's certainly natural. You do whatever you want to do. In our society, it is not the norm, I'll put it that way, but that doesn't mean that you have to be normal. I'm not saying that. I'm not normal. I don't advocate other people be normal. But anyway, breastfeed as long as you can, even if it's just a few weeks. Some people can't breastfeed, so they can pump, but still pump. And breastfeed as long as you can. There's no shame if you can't do it or if you can't continue because you've got to get back to work or you can't keep the doors open. That there, you know, I'm a huge fan of breastfeeding, and it's good for the kid. My son, Beck, would not be here today, or he would be severely impaired if it weren't for the fact that Tacy was breastfeeding him. I've told this story before, but, you know, I get off on tangents. This is a tangent.
Sure.
He, at 5 days of being on this earth, had a fever of 105. That is not normal for a five-day-old. So we ran him to the hospital. He had respiratory syncytial virus, a.k.a. RSV, which in adult causes colds, but in babies particularly can be devastating to them. And as a matter of fact, he was so sick that the some of the nurses were whispering to themselves that, and you know, and of course we heard it, that they didn't know if he was going to even make it. And so we're, you know, I'm real good in the short term, and then I break down. Tacy's real good. She breaks down in the beginning, and then she's good in the long term. So we make a good couple. And but we got him in there, but she continued to breastfeed. Well, it turned out she gave him the RSV because she had it. But she had IgA antibodies for respiratory syncytial virus in her breast milk, and he just sailed right through. They said, listen, if he does make it, this is how they put it to us, if he does make it, he's probably going to have severe asthma and not be able to play sports and be all this stuff. And he had none of that. Sailed right through.
Yeah, he's as healthy as can be.
But the medication that he got was breast milk. Breastfeed. As long as you can. All right, and if you can't, no shame in it, but it is helpful if you can't even for a short period of time. So, yeah, sorry. I'm not aware of a alternative to Polyvisol that smells better, but the kid doesn't care.
Yeah.
All right. And once you get them on a good, balanced diet with lots of fruits, vegetables, and other stuff, you can kind of can that.
Cool.
All right. Let's do this one.
Hey, Dr. Steve, Dr. Scott, Tacy, how you guys doing?
Hey, good, man.
Great, man.
Good to hear. So how does extra sodium in your diet increase blood pressure? I was reading that it makes your body retain water, which increases blood pressure. But then if you drink a bunch of water, just really hydrated, why doesn't that also increase your blood pressure?
Ah.
I assume that's something to do with the sodium, like, making you hold on to water at the cell level,
yeah.
But that's why I'm asking.
Very
you.
Good. Well, I'll give him one of these. Oops. Uh-oh. Yeah, well, shoot. Now it's too late. I was going to give you a bill, but now I lost the moment. there is a very close relationship between high blood pressure and dietary sodium intake. There are some people that low sodium can actually be a deficit, but we'll forget that very small subset for right now. But reducing dietary sodium not only reduces blood pressure and the incidence of high blood pressure, but it's also associated with a reduction in morbidity and mortality. In other words, end organ damage and death from cardiovascular diseases. So you know, the high salt intake and high blood pressure levels are indeed related to water retention. So when you have sodium, what follows it always is water. And then you get increased peripheral resistance. I'm going to have to call her back. Increased resistance to blood flow, which also increases blood pressure. And you get alterations in the function of the linings of the blood vessels. And then you get in changes in autonomic nervous system, modulation of the cardiovascular system. Remember, we've talked before about how when you stand up, mm-hmm. then the blood vessels constrict to right. increase blood flow to the brain. That's autonomic nervous system. All of this stuff is involved in sodium metabolism. So it's not just as simple as, well, you have more fluid in your system. Because you're right. If you drink a bunch of water, transiently, your blood volume will increase, but the body is very efficient at peeing out free water when it needs to.
Right.
It's just hard for it to do when there's a shitload of sodium on board. Mm-hmm. So it's got to figure out a way to get rid of the sodium, yep. and it will exchange sodium for potassium. It does all kinds of, and for hydrogen and all kinds of other things that make things very complex. So basically, the end note to this is that it is more complex than just a dilution situation.
Yeah, you can't just drink extra water and lower your salt.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so decrease your sodium intake if your primary care provider or cardiologist tells you to. And in general, avoiding an excess of salt is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Agreed.
Okay. Let me see. This one says, finally, some fucking good news for once. Let's do this one.
Hey, Dr. Steve. This is Bruno from California. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Nice. I'm doing good, too.
Good.
So I was listening to your episode the other day, and you mentioned the CAR T cell treatment for cancer.
Yes. This is the thing where they take out white blood cells, expose them to cancer cells, put them back in, and then have them just go fight cancer. It's just like giving a search dog a sock of somebody and saying, "Go find them."
CAR T. Okay.
Yeah, we did a story on it.
No, it was so new because my mom was diagnosed with lymphoma last year, like the end of last year.
Okay.
In November, I think.
Yeah.
Or not last year. Sorry, 2 years ago. And the first
lymphoma is a cancer of lymph nodes, basically.
The treatment they did was chemo, and it looked like it was working. So the cancer went into recession.
Remission.
I think that's the right word.
Yeah, that's okay.
And
we know what you meant.
So it was gone for a couple of months, but then on one of her checkups, it looked like it came back more aggressive.
Okay, so this will happen sometimes. Lymphoma very often will go into remission very rapidly with chemo, but then sometimes it will come back. We call it, the initial sort of quote-unquote disappearance of the lymphoma is called remission, mm-hmm. and then you're looking for sustained remission, which she did not have.
Yeah.
So they changed up their strategy, and they told us about the CAR T cell
yeah.
treatment, which we had never heard of. But so she went through the process of getting that treatment. It was a pretty long process overall, but
yeah,
she got it done. It was much easier than the chemo for her.
Good.
And now the cancer is gone. I mean, she's still going to do her checkups and stuff, but the cancer is just gone.
Wow.
They couldn't find any more like cancer tumors or cells or anything like
Yay.
That. It's just incredible that we've come this far with medicine and science. Anyway, yeah, I hope this wasn't super long winded. I apologize.
No, dude, it's totally worth it.
Have a good
That's
day.
Awesome. It's Thank awesome. You. Congratulations, dude.
Okay, so this CAR T stuff is chimeric antigen receptor T cell therapy. And it's a way to get these immune cells, which are called T cells,
okay.
and they're white blood cells that fight other cells, particularly cancer, and they change them in the lab so they can find and destroy these cancer cells. That's basically the easiest way. So this is a cell-based gene therapy because it involves altering the genes inside the T cells to help them attack the cancer. It's highfalutin stuff.
Oh, I bet.
And so this, we'll see more and more of this. I've been kind of touting a form of this for a long time. As a matter of fact, if you go to drsteve.com, click on non-pseudoscience cancer therapies, there's an example of a similar treatment to this that they did on a woman with stage 4 terminal cervical cancer that is walking around today cancer-free because of this.
Unbelievable.
So it's amazing to me that this stuff is already on the market. And apparently, to some limited ability or a limited amount, it's been on the market for a few years. Mm. And I just don't think that it – I think it was still very, associated with just a few places, maybe MD Anderson or the bigger cancer university research centers.
Right on.
But now you can get it – just get it, looks like, a bunch of places. So very cool. Mm. So ask about CAR T therapy if, God forbid, you get diagnosed with cancer. Let's do one more and then we'll get out of here, Dr. Scott.
Sounds good.
All right, here we go. Well,
hey, Dr. Steve.
Hey, man.
Dr. Scott.
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
Miss Tacy, if you're there.
Hey, hi.
This is Paul from New York, and I have a question related to cholesterol.
Okay.
I'm a volunteer firefighter and on Long Island, and we're given physicals each year, so I don't really go to a general practitioner.
Okay.
I'm 43 years old. And our physicals are pretty in-depth, and they do blood work and send us the results of the blood work after the fact.
Okay.
And for 2 years in a row, it has shown my cholesterol as being high.
Okay. Write these down, Scott.
I'm wondering whether it's something I should be concerned about, because they're showing the overall cholesterol is 230.
Okay.
And that normal is between 100 and 199. But it shows my HDL cholesterol is 86, and normal should be greater than 40, which 86 is.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. My LDL cholesterol is 127, and it says it should be less than 130, which mm-hmm. it is.
Okay.
Triglycerides are 83.
Yeah.
VLDL is 17,
God damn.
Cholesterol HDL ratio is 2.7.
Did you get all those?
No,
all
get
of those numbers fall within the proper range, and yet the overall is 230, and they say it's high.
Yeah.
Is this something that I should have looked into, or that I should go to a primary care physician about, or is it something that I shouldn't be concerned about?
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
So, all right, Scott, I'm going to put this through a Framingham calculator.
Okay.
Did he say how old he was?
Yeah, 48.
He's 48. Okay, good deal. Thank you. So, 48. And his HDL was what?
86.
86. And his total cholesterol?
230.
And he didn't say if he's on blood pressure medicine. I'm assuming he is
probably
not.
Probably not.
So, I'll do 120. And I'm assuming he does not smoke. He didn't say that either.
Well, he's a fireman, so he's probably pretty active. Pretty,
yeah. You know, okay. And I'm going to say he doesn't have diabetes. So let me see. No to that. So his 10-year risk of cardiovascular disease with these numbers is 4.7%. Now, let's see what the normal is for a 48. I don't like this calculator. This calculator can kiss my ass. Let me find. Okay, we said 4.7, right?
Mm-hmm.
Omni calculator. I don't like that one. Framingham cardiac risk calculator. Okay, this is the one I usually use. Because it'll tell you compared to your normal. So, 48 years, sorry, everybody, 48-year male, non-smoker with a total cholesterol of 230
mm-hmm.
and an HDL of 86. Now, Scott, while I'm doing this, will you take 230 and divide it by 86 and then tell me what the normal is, or what that number is? Is it really taking that long?
Well, goddamn, I got to open my fucking phone.
Okay.
Jesus Christ.
That's fine. Echo, what's
2.6.
Okay, thank you.
Hell, fucking fire.
I'm not sure.
So this calculator, this is why I like this one. It just calmed. Oh, he's a non-smoker, though. Okay. So this calculator is calculating him at 2.7%. The average for a 48-year-old is 8%. So the reason for that is, even though his total cholesterol is elevated, his good cholesterol is very high. And his risk ratio, what did you say, 2.67 is below 3. So anyone with a risk ratio of 3 or below actually is felt to have a decreased risk of cardiac events, even though their total cholesterol may be elevated. All right?
Right on.
All right.
So in other words, those numbers are not bad.
Right. No. I mean,
especially if his diet's pretty good.
Yeah, so this is predicated on him being a non-smoker without hypertension. Now, if he is a smoker, his risk is exactly equal to the average 10-year, and you want it to be below average. So in that case, bringing his total cholesterol down to like 180 would decrease him back to 4.7.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if he's going to smoke, he's got to get that total cholesterol down. Mm-hmm. But if he is a non-smoker and doesn't have high blood pressure, then he's actually in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, can we talk about real quick just some options if he wants to try to get the number down just
yes,
a little
yes,
bit?
Yes, yes, yes. Of course, we should
natural,
discuss that.
Natural options if it's dietary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly changing his foods. And, you know, there's been a lot of new research. Maybe we'll talk about it next week on the show about red meat.
We always say we're going
to. No, I'll make a note. About red meat and the problems it does cause. Eating red meat over time.
Yeah.
And also, but if you have, and we've talked about this, but it's been a long time, but one way that may help lower your serum cholesterol is blood donation. If you can be a blood donor, there has been research on that. And certainly exercise can help lower your cholesterol, which he probably does as a fireman.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe just genetically, he's supposed to have a slightly higher than 200 level of cholesterol.
Yep.
Yeah, possibly.
Yep.
I mean, he may have blue eyes and not brown eyes or... Or maybe 6 foot.
Well, you know,
four,
people
not 6 foot one.
You know, one of the reasons they looked at the Mediterranean diet was because people were eating more stuff than people thought that they should. Certain people thought that they should, and they still had low cardiovascular mortality.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but they found that olive oil, these monounsaturated fats, are actually pretty good for you. So. Donating blood regularly can lower your cholesterol and triglyceride levels. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is what I always told people was increasing soluble fiber.
Mm-hmm.
So getting some Citrucel, maybe drinking no more than 4 ounces of red wine. And if you're a teetotaler, I wouldn't tell someone who's sober to drink.
No.
But you could drink 4 ounces of red grape juice because it's got the same stuff in it. Exercising. And exercising will bring up your good cholesterol. It may decrease your bad cholesterol, but it definitely will improve your risk ratio. And the other things that Scott said, too. So there you go.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I was afraid he was going to have like some 600, 800 total cholesterol.
I know, no, it's great. It's not bad.
Not terrible.
Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't still have a checkup with a primary care provider at 48. You need to start thinking about that. And really, at 48, you're overdue for your first colonoscopy. Mm-hmm. So definitely get a primary care provider. But bring those levels with you. Go to find a Framingham risk calculator, put in your actual numbers, whether you're a smoker or not, and print that out and take it with you to your visit, okay? How's that? Anything else?
Good.
All right. You got anything else?
No, I think.
All right. Well, if I could find our script, we'd get out of here. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for listening to our show today. And if you don't hear your shout-out today, it's because I didn't do it, because Scott's in a hurry and we want to play music. So listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel. SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 7 p.m., Sunday at 6 p.m., on demand and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. And thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules, podcasts, and other crap. And check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps. Quit smoking, get off your asses, get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number four best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number four best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.